there's something real special to me when someone goes out of their way to help carry the message like that. I'm our area web chair, and I know the little bit I've done of the website has been a lot of work, and I do a little bit of that stuff at work, and I know how much trouble it is to do all that, and to take some of your own time and effort and money, because it's not cheap to do this stuff either, to help carry that message to the still suffering addict. Says a lot to me about how much they want to share what they have, and I always have to remember that our program is about giving it away. And with that, from the east of the Bay Area, I'll give you Mike Carr.
Hi, everybody. I'm an addict. I'm Mike.
I'm Mike.
Hi. You know, I just saw what Greg did in asking everybody to hug everybody else and say, welcome, we're glad you're here, because that's about, you know, making sure everyone feels welcome. One of the things I was thinking about, because he explained to me, you know, why they asked me to be the opening speaker, and I thought that, you know, being that this is a unity retreat, you know, what do you say to someone when you hug them and welcome them, you know, to say, you know, we can make it together. And I just wanted to know if we can do another, you know, hug three people. And the message that you should give is, together, we're going to make it.
Good to see you.
Okay. Thanks very much. See, that's an important message. To me, that's an important message, because what I hear up here and what my disease tells me, and what my head has always told me the whole time I was using, was I'm going to make it alone. You know, and that's the biggest lie, maybe one of the biggest lies that my disease tells me, that I'm going to make it alone and everything will be better when I'm by myself and away from everybody else. Because I heard that, you know, and I would isolate myself away from everybody and it almost killed me. And I don't know how many people, you know, end up dying alone because of addiction. Where I come from, people talk stats and they say an addict dies every such and such amount of minutes, and this many addicts must have died during the meeting, and I can't count all the addicts, so I have no idea how many people die from addiction, but I know it happens all the time, and you know, I know that it doesn't scare us. Most of us believe that it won't be us that's going to die, you know, which is why when you hear in the meeting and the end of who is an addict that says, our ends are always the same, jails, institutions, and death. When you're here a while and you get honest and you see what's going on, you see that's the truth. I mean, the other option being recovery from addiction in Narcotics Anonymous, but we tell ourselves that lie that it won't be me. You know, most of us do, coming in here believing that it wouldn't happen to me. Part of the denial to keep the process going. I told myself all sorts of lies about how I was only hurting myself, if anybody. And, you know, it took a while coming to our meetings and listening to our literature. And it says, you know, we did many people great harm, but most of all, we harmed ourselves. In my process of being clean and looking at the world around me and the way everyone acts to me based on how I look or how I act, I can say that it was obvious after a while of being clean that I hurt a lot of other people, you know, and still in denial about how much I really hurt myself. Staying clean because maybe on the pitch that, you know, if you're really not an addict, you should be able to stay clean for 90 days, you know, because I heard that and I've used almost every day for the whole time that I used. From the moment I used, I was like a wild man using every day, you know. The pamphlet that was on the table when I got clean was the Am I an Addict pamphlet. It had 45 questions, and ask a lot of different questions about, you know, to make it clear to me that I'm an addict. One of the questions was, do you buy drugs before you buy food or other necessities? And, you know, I mean, like, a lot of the questions, they're, like, really good questions, you know, and, like, only an addict would, you know, be confused about them, maybe, try to come up with a rationalization about, well, you know, I try to explain the answer. You know, I mean, like, I know that the only place that I ever shopped at for food was at 7-Eleven at 2 o'clock in the morning. And it took some clean time to realize that 7-Eleven is not a grocery store. And, it's not a grocery store. That's insane. I mean, like, I would shop there because no one was, like, looking at me eye to eye. No one was messing with me. I was buying my hot dog and my spice drops because I, like, I didn't eat right when I was using. Not that there's anything wrong with spice drops and hot dogs, but not for, like, meals and stuff. Like, spice drops is not a meal. Hey, you know, I had no idea that I could join Narcotics Anonymous and stay clean for almost the bulk of my active addiction. You know, it was insanity. It was insane episode after insane episode, trying to keep the process together, trying to sell drugs to support my habit, trying to work everybody over around me so I could just get high. And I didn't know there was any other way in. And I think that what happened, I was living in my parents' house because, you know, I've listened to a bunch of different stories here and I've identified on a lot of different levels with what you've shared with me about why you're here, why you recover. I've listened to people talk about losing things and losing spouses and children and social services coming in and taking their stuff and all sorts of, you know, losing cars and all sorts of stuff like that. And, you know, I came here and looked at my life and I hadn't lost anything. But, you know, people explain to me the disease of addiction manifests itself differently for different addicts, for different people. And the reality is that I didn't lose anything because I was never going to get anything. I was never going to move out of my parents' house. I was never going to get a car to lose. It's insane, you know. And because I was as young as I was, I figured I didn't have a problem. Maybe I had to be a certain age to have a problem. And our literature cleared it up. It wasn't the members that were around where I got clean that cleared things up for me so well, because they all basically were the same demographic group who did the same kind of drugs, and they'd share about the drugs in the meeting. But our literature says, we don't care what or how much you used. We don't care what drug was at the center when you come to Narcotics Anonymous. If you want help here, we got it for you. We don't care where you grew up. We don't care, you know, who your parents were. We don't care whether you grew up in an abusive home or the best home, or whether you're rich or poor. And I listened to that stuff and said, you know, I had the big hole in my guts when I came to Narcotics Anonymous, totally afraid. You know, and after being here a little while and staying clean between meetings, and you know, perhaps I did that. Maybe I stayed clean because I, you know, didn't want to go to jail. I'd been arrested and I had some obligations about getting court slips signed and, but, you know, my initial shots at getting clean had nothing to do with Narcotics Anonymous. You know, where as far as I was concerned, there was nothing like it. And you know, one day I think my mom, who was working for the state of Delaware, had heard about a treatment program that she knew one person had gotten clean out of, and she wanted me to go see what was up with it. So I went in there it was probably around Valentine's Day, and on an interview I lied. Every question they asked me, I did not tell them the truth even once. You know, because that was one of the things I did in my active addiction. I didn't tell anybody the truth. I didn't tell anybody the truth that I used with about how much I used. I didn't tell anybody the truth that I didn't use with about how much I used. I suppose that's because I was ashamed. And maybe it was because I wanted to sound better or worse or whatever than I really was. But there was no truth coming out of me. And I ended up going to that institution because I didn't have another place to stay. I had a plan about but basically it was February, and I'm not sure how I've like spelled it out for you. It was like my third or fourth attempt at my family trying to get me help, trying to get me clean, and I was really tired of using. But I didn't know any other way. I know that on my birthday, before I went to that institution, I came home early. And birthday's always been, like, I've always looked for excuses to get high. I think a lot of us do. You know, it's my birthday, so let's party. It's Friday, let's party. It's the holiday. It's you know, whatever. It's graduation. It's funeral. It's, you know, I don't know what things I said, let's do it this way because of this. And I know I did that a lot. Towards the end, I never had any reasons to get high or use. I came up with any kind of reason. Any reason was a good reason. Anyway, I ended up, it was snowing, like, really bad, and then my mom came up with this ultimatum. This is the day you're, like, getting out and finding another place to stay or going to this treatment program. We're sick and tired of having to, like, walk around the house with our pocketbooks and with our faces to you so that you're not turned, you know. Like, my brother would always stand so that he would face me, wouldn't turn his back on me. And it took years clean before he would, you know, even be glad to see me. I think that's the truth. 2 and 3 years clean, he told me, look, you know, you just substituted those meetings. And you're really not about anything. You're just an addict addicted to those meetings, and it's only a matter of time. And maybe that's the truth. I'm not really sure. To me, I thought I was changing. You know, and I tried to express to him, I'm a different person. Things are different for me. I live a different way. And he didn't see things like that, you know. And, you know, like if you read our literature, it talks about you can make amends to people, but you can't plan, like, whether they're going to accept your amends. You just make the amends, make the change in yourself. And, like, I tried to show him I'm a different guy, and he didn't take them then. But I didn't smash things up. Like, I was always one for smashing things up if it didn't go my way. Sabotage it, you know? And over time, our relationship is better. I'll jump back. I went to this treatment center. And like, I really don't believe that people have to go there to get clean, but I needed to go there to find out about Narcotics Anonymous. Because where I was, people weren't, like, advertising, you know? They weren't running PSAs on TV and the radio or billboards, and so it was a secret to me. It wasn't just an anonymous fellowship, it was absolutely a total secret. I had no idea. No idea addicts got clean. And, like, lived lives. I went to that treatment program, and I don't really know what happened there. I suppose that H&I, the Philadelphia area, brought me H&I meetings. And I had a chance to sit down and listen to what they had to say. And people said, hey, you know, if you want to stay clean, you know, just for the day, you never have to use again against your will. And that was big, you know, because I knew what using against my will was. I knew about, you know, wanting something different, you know, or wanting to go be responsible, or wanting to go to work, or wanting to end up at school. And then I had this great idea that I would just go get some of these drugs that I was planning on using later. And I'd show up for that, and I'd get that. And then I thought, well, I'll just take a little before I go where I gotta be, and then I would never end up where I was gonna be. And, you know, everyone could count on me to let them down. So, you know, in going to this place, you know, I don't think any magic happened there. I think that if I'd have found NA, I probably could have gotten clean. It's tough to say. But for me, like, I ended up locked up there for 30 days. And I suppose part of it was against my will. I didn't really want to be there. I really wanted to continue the process because I didn't know there was any hope. You know, let me back it up a second. I said that, you know, like, about all the excuses about getting high. On my birthday, I went out thinking I was going to go get high, and I was having a bad time, so I went home at, like, 7:30 or 8 o'clock. And, like, I'm used to sneaking up my parents' front steps to the house. I know how many steps there are. I'd count them all the way up so I wouldn't get to the top step and take a big step and fall on the floor and hit the wall. And because that was like an announcement that I was home, so I'd be like, you know, 1, 2, 3, you know, like sneaking up the steps. Well, anyway, I came home on my birthday and said, look, I'm just going to bed tonight. To my parents who were still up, which was really rare. And I went to my bedroom and I cried because I knew I was going to die. I knew I wasn't going to live another year. I really didn't think that I was going to see another birthday the way things were going. And, like, in looking at that and the way I was feeling and the way I was living, like, I was living like an animal. I did not take care of myself. I know that my tongue has, like, the Grand Canyon and all the other little canyons all from seizures from the drugs that I was taking, I'm assuming. I don't remember. But it looks really bad. Still, you know. That's like an animal. Animals that are, like, chained up and don't have food, they, like, chew their tongue, you know. Like, that's what I understand today. And I didn't even look at, like, living skills reduced to an animal level. But when I heard that, I knew, you know, that I could identify. See, I identified at all sorts of levels with you, regardless of our background. You know, after I got past the, you look different from me, your ride has got a motor on its two wheels, and mine does not. It's got a pedal. And, you know, it's, you know, people think you're, like, fit and, like, about exercise when you're, like, riding your bike down the road and stuff. Until you smoke a cigarette, and then they know you're not about being healthy. And then they know it's your car. Anyway, I don't know what people said to me in those Narcotics Anonymous meetings. I know that at the first couple meetings, you know, people told me, you don't have to use again ever against your will. And I like that. It sounded good, you know, that I could stop using, find a new way of life. You know, I don't know how much I embraced that, but when I left the treatment center, I found our meetings, and I found the people that were going to our meetings. And some of them counted me in, some of them counted me out. But that's good. I mean, there was just enough of a message for me to say, I can do this. We can do this together. I can stay clean. And, you know, I asked a bunch of different people to be my sponsor because I didn't realize you were supposed to, like, get one. And like, I didn't actually hear people talking about working the steps. I think that, you know, I heard people talking about how they do the steps, you know, the people who, you know, there are a lot of people saying cliches. And I think cliches are, like, really good in place of, like, a program. If you don't have, like, a program, if people around you aren't working the program or showing you how to work a program or talking about the benefits of working the program, and you can, like, find out how the hell you could do that yourself, cliches work, you know, to a degree in their place. And I heard a lot of cliches from people, you know, and they would say, I didn't quit, I surrendered. And, you know, I mean, like, the distinction about that, what's the difference between quitting, using, and surrendering to the principles of Narcotics Anonymous? And, like, I didn't know. You know, I'm just a newcomer looking to be made welcome, and I'm really looking to be counted out. I've spent a lot of time trying to find differences in my early clean time. I wanted to be different. I wanted this to not work for me. I wanted to go back to using. And I think that I would venture to say that probably most of the newcomers that I meet spend some time looking to be made not welcome. And I know that the people who ran up to me and hugged me and remembered my name after the first meeting, saw them at the second meeting, they knew my name, that blew me away. You know, you remembered my name, and, like, I don't look the same as I did when I first came to Narcotics Anonymous. I had long hair, and I probably weighed about 50 pounds less than I weigh now, and, like, I probably weigh about 155, 160, so I didn't look too good. I looked really bad. You know, anyway, I found that, you know, people were talking about how they work the steps, and because I, like I said, most of us want to do this on our own. If you're new, maybe you haven't found a sponsor yet, and you've maybe bought the step. We got a step writing guide now, or step working guide, and a lot of people I've talked to, they almost sound like they got that thing so they could work the steps on their own, the way they think they ought to. And the step working guide doesn't replace the loving guidance of a sponsor, doesn't replace the experience that they have to work in the steps. Lots of good questions get you a good understanding, but it's not the same as having, like, a guide. A step guide is my sponsor. Because my sponsor likes to say, you know, in his speech, he talks too sometimes at meetings, and he says that, like, in the end of the meeting, in the circle, he likes to look at everybody and think that if everyone there would help the person on their left and the person on their right stay clean another day, we would all stay clean forever. And that's about unity. I mean, like, you know, when I realized that this is a unity retreat, and I guess I must have met Rich online through sending emails. I don't normally talk about being involved with the internet. I don't want you guys to look at me and think I'm a geek. prior to me using, I think that most people thought I was a geek. I got an email from Rich. I think he was saying something about my website, and I sent him some, you know, I got lots of emails about that website. And, I think it's pretty cool, you know, that I was looking at my speaker tapes one day thinking, I got a big pile of speaker tapes from going to conventions and partying with people in NA and loving other addicts, and it's just a pile of tapes that doesn't do anything for anybody, really. I could make a copy and hand it to someone like at my home group and go, I really like this meet and I think you will too. Why don't you listen to it? And they might not. And I guess I was divinely inspired to do something that might help people in a big way. And, you know, I'm glad I was able to do it. You know, I think that in early time, people talked about, you know, that a grateful addict will never use. You know, I think I must have stayed clean on, well, you know, in the beginning for me, it was all desperation. After coming here for a little while, and I'm talking like a little while, like 2 weeks, 3 weeks, and staying clean between meetings, I realized that what you guys had was real. And that you were talking about real life stuff like jobs that you were getting raises at and promotions at and working in society, like being real people. And had still like some crazy ass problems and stuff. But I can identify with the crazy problems as a newcomer, you know. And not so good with like, you know, I don't identify so much with what works, but I really pick up on when people say, I did this and it blew up in my face. I tried this and it didn't work. You know, all the stuff that people shared in meetings about what they did that didn't work, that was big for me, you know. And I've heard people say, it was all cliches when I came, you know. A smart man learns from his own mistakes. A wise man learns from others. You know, that like got me to want to listen in meetings better. It was like early clean time when I got clean. Everybody had kids. Everybody at the meetings except for me. And all their kids were running around during the meeting and making noise. And it pissed me off, man. I couldn't hear the speaker and I was there to save my ass. And I learned to sit in a way that I would always be able to see who was talking. You know, like if the person up front was talking, I'd get a good seat so I could sit up front, see the person talking. Well, when he got done, I had to move so I could see the next person because the kids were making noise. And, you know, what happened to me as a result of all that was that I learned how to listen. Because I always had to be facing the person who was talking, and I always had to see their face and their mouth so I could at least make out, like, what they were talking about. I figured if I'm going to be here, I might as well hear what people are talking about. And I really got the message like that. I mean, because I really, you know, if I'm not actively listening, I'm not. You know, I'm checking out the girl over here. I knew that she was single. And I heard people talking about staying out of relationships for like a year, but since that didn't apply to me, I had to say, you mean, like, I understood, like, 90 means 90. That sounded really good. That had something to do with, like, getting a foundation. And like, I've even heard people say that, like, the government has spent, like, $1 million doing a study to find out that it took 90 days to form a new habit, you know? 90 meetings in 90 days, you have a habit of going to meetings and not using in between. I could have told them that. They could have given me $1 million. You know? But they told me they spent the money. All right. You know, like, there were suggestions that applied to me, and there were suggestions that didn't apply to me. And, like, I was about trying to hit the 90 meetings. It took going to some meetings where I heard people talk about how they got done right in their fourth step. And I had a basic text. That was, like, you had the basic text and a bunch of pamphlets. And like, I was reading my basic text on my own. People would talk about, like, I was home reading basic text, and I read Who is an Addict, and boy, what a great chapter that was, you know? And boy, I got a lot out of that, and I'd hear that stuff, and I wanted to know what was in the basic text, you know? And it wasn't until my friend John said that he had just gotten done working his fourth step with his sponsor, and pointed out his sponsor, this guy here, that I was like, wow, like, people get together outside of meetings. Like, I knew that we went to the diner, you know what I mean? I knew that was happening. And I knew that, you know, from that point on, that I should get a sponsor. I should get this guy to be my sponsor, because he's working steps with this guy who I'm friends with. And so I asked him, because he was the first guy I heard. I mean, I had like 6 months clean, and I finally heard someone say, well, I got it with my sponsor. Like, the first two guys that asked me my sponsor, the first one, the only information he gave me was, just because you got clean doesn't mean that everyone's going to stick all the drugs in a rocket ship and blow them up into outer space. And I was like, yeah, that's right. I guess I got to stay clean if I want to. You know, he started to help me find about, can't stay clean on desperation forever. Desperation wears off. Your ass, the fire on your ass goes out. You know, going to have to find a desire to stay clean. The second guy asked me, my sponsor, I helped him wallpaper his kitchen for $5 an hour. And I was like, hot damn, $5 an hour, no tax. You know, it's like, he, like, helped me big time, but he never said anything about, you know, I'd like you to read this pamphlet, or I'd like you to read this out of the basic text, or look up these words in the dictionary. They're the words of the first step, and this is, we'll figure out how this works, and you're new, and you need to learn about the first step so you can practice it in your life so you can stay clean, because without it, you're screwed. Nobody gave me that information. And I really think that when you ask someone to be your sponsor, if they believe that's the truth, you know, without any steps in your life, you're screwed. You know, it's only a matter of time before you use again with no steps. Because the 12 steps of Narcotics Anonymous are how we change. It's how we find a new way of life. It's not about willpower. You know, it's not about just group support. Unity is very important, but if you don't work the program, it's only going to be a matter of time before a little life storm comes up, and you're going to be on the bow of the boat, and you're just going to get swept off. You know, it's one thing to see people in the boat, and they're diving off, and that happens all the time. Relapse is a reality in Narcotics Anonymous. It's another thing to see people who want to be in here and don't get the information to stay here, and they get swept off the bow, you know. And people told me, get in the boat. Get in the boat. Row. Bail. Do something. Work the program. So I asked this guy to be my sponsor because I heard he was working steps, and he said, great. I told him I wanted to work the fourth step. He said, great. We can do this. And I'd like you to read the fourth step out of the basic text, and you'll find that it says, before you start the fourth step, to review the first three with your sponsor. I'd like you to read the first step, and I'd like you to look up all the words in the first step and in the first step that are in the dictionary, and I'd like you to define them for yourself and what they say in the dictionary. I'd like you to write this down. I'd like you to get a paper and a pen and write step one at the top. Write your name at the top. Write the date at the top. And start when you're ready. And I did it. You know, I wrote down, I think actually what he said to me was he wanted me to like write what I thought about the first three steps and we'd go over it, and then he'd give me direction about the fourth step. And that, like, that's how I got started, you know. I hadn't ever heard anyone talk about writing, you know, and now people do it all the time. I think sometime after that there were underground step guides, and then there were, like, other books and, like, all sorts of stuff happened in Narcotics Anonymous, the literature movement. So I guess it happened with the basic text. People say that the literature movement started in, like, 78 or something like that. But I'm so grateful we have a basic text. I don't think we'd have much of a fellowship if it weren't for that book being written. And I'm grateful for the people that were here before me. It was through that first sponsor. See, I call him my first sponsor. He's the third guy I asked, but he's my first sponsor because he's the first guy that helped me recover, that helped me get better. And that's what a sponsor is a guide through the 12 steps, the steps for changing. He showed me unconditional love. He also showed me a bunch of conditional stuff. But, I mean, like, he's just a human being. That's one of the things that, like, you know, we all got character defects, and the person you ask to be your sponsor and look up to and put on a pedestal, one day he's going to fall off, and it'll probably hurt you. We're all human, you know, and he shined on me. But when he helped me, he helped me. You know, it was a big deal because, I hung out with him. You know, he's a big friend. And I think that some of the best suggestions that I've heard about getting a sponsor, that's a great suggestion, you know. Get a home group. My home group's where I can see the same people every week and share about what's going on with me and how my, you know, what's going on. I share about me from, like, my perspective. Because I'm, you know, one of the things, I didn't know what to share in meetings when I got here. I'd like to talk about what other people were doing. I'd like to blame other people. I'd like to blame other people for my addiction. You know, I like to point the fingers at everybody else and it doesn't work. You know, no one gets better pointing the finger at other people. We stay sick. I think a lot of things happened. You know, I spent some time, I got clean in Wilmington. That's where I grew up, in Wilmington in Delaware. And I had about 7 months clean, you know. Things were going pretty good and I thought maybe I should, you know, I actually held my $4 an hour job. I think that was minimum wage. And I wanted to do something big with my life, so I moved to the university town. There were no meetings there. And that's where this guy was that I'd asked to be my sponsor lived, and so we had to start meeting so we wouldn't have to be driving all the time because I was going to school and trying to get a life, you know, trying to become a responsible member of society, trying to put some dreams back together. Because for me, you know, like, in staying clean, I realized that the dreams got to go. We were ripping them out left and right. Ripping them out to get high, knowing that I couldn't do the things that I was hoping that I could do earlier in my life. You know, and it was a big deal to, like, be in a place where there were, like, no other recovering addicts except for this one guy, and to have to start NA where it was, you know, where there was none. And so I had to be at all the meetings, and I had to be the officer at one meeting, the secretary at one, and the treasurer at the other, and a GSR at the third. And, you know, I don't know what's appropriate for you where your Narcotics Anonymous is, you know. I think that, you know, I skipped right over the fact that when I had 2 months clean, I became treasurer of the second oldest group in my area because it had three home group members. And the other two, one was the GSR and one was the secretary. And they wanted me to be the treasurer. They wanted to trust me. They'd seen me for like 3 weeks and they thought that they could trust me with the $20 we collected in the month. And, you know, when they voted and they accepted me to be the treasurer, it blew me away. And they said, we're going to trust you with this money. Be at all the meetings, and if you got a problem between meetings, call us. We're there for you. That was huge because no one had trusted me for years. And these guys loved me and cared for me. It was just like a big deal just being a part. You know, like I was talking about having a sponsor and getting a home group. I got in someone's side pocket. I made a friend in here, and we went to a bunch of different meetings. And he told me how we had to get involved with special events because we were going to have dances, and if we didn't do that, there wouldn't be any fun for us. And I didn't want the fun to end. You know, I think that there's a lot that I could talk about between, like, that early clean time and the adventure of, like, just getting clean and finding out that this is really, you know, that I really am an addict and looking at, like, counting myself in, looking at what you share and how I can identify with the insanity. When I'm at the end, continuing the process of using and knowing that, you know, I can't use, but I gotta use. You know, knowing that I just can't keep it going anymore, and there's just no way out, you know. Like I talked about crying at the end of my addiction, I used for 5 or 6 more weeks before I ended up in that treatment center, because I didn't know any other way. I knew that there was nothing better for me. You know, and then with that early clean time, you know, thinking, wow, this is like a possibility. I am staying clean, and like I can remember what I did yesterday. And, you know, like that was like a big deal that I could remember. And I didn't have to make excuses for my behavior, you know, that I could start behaving, like, more along the lines of what, like, people, human beings, like, that are about something, like, the way they behave, you know? And, like, the whole early recovery, it was all about, like, hanging out and having fun and seeing that I could still have fun and probably weigh into, like, going to school. And I didn't, like, get my degree from going to school, but I went a long time and because, like, I was not focused. You know, I think that as people work the program, you get a better focus. I think the 10th step is a powerful tool for, you know, how are you going to live today? And I didn't have a 10th step in my early recovery. And I probably have about 110 or 120 credit hours in at the University of Delaware towards a Bachelor of Science degree, but I had no degree. I could say that I got involved in service, like, up to here. I did anything that people asked for at, I was there. You know, let me be involved with it. And I got involved with area service, and I got involved with what was going on regional service. And I found some interest in stuff, but most of my interests were like Narcotics Anonymous, having relationships with people, because I really believe that all life is relationships. You know, if you take a look at the third step, it says, we made a decision to turn our will and our life over to the care of God as we understood Him. And, you know, in making that decision for me, you know, I had to figure out what my will is. And that, you know, my will is simply what I want to do. I guess it's my goals. And my life is, you know, it's about the past. It's about what's happened up till now because of the goals and the things that I've done and where I've been a hypocrite and not followed my own goals. That's been my life, you know. My life is like the way I live. It's the things I do now. It's the way I interact with people. And, you know, I feel that, like, my early recovery was about having, like, a basis of being clean and having fun and realizing, you know, and just experiencing life, you know. And that's what I did. I was focused a lot on having relationships with a woman because I was not, you know, like I said, not married. I didn't have good relationship skills when I got here. I think that prior to coming here, my self-worth was based on the woman that I was with and how she looked and whether you wanted to have sex with her or not. You know, for all intents and purposes, some of the girlfriends that I had in my active addiction prior to me not needing another head to get high, because I couldn't have a girlfriend at the end. For all intents and purposes, she should have been stuffed and mounted and dragged around on a dolly so that people could see who I was with, so I could get the shot of, you know, how you thought I must have been like a good guy, because look at who I'm with, you know. See, because I didn't know anything about self-acceptance coming into Narcotics Anonymous. It had nothing to do with self. Nothing came from the inside. It was always about looking to everybody around me for that outside fix. You know, and the thing about really not wanting to work the steps early on had a lot to do with, you know, early looking at the steps. It's not a quick fix. And I'm so geared towards, I want to fix now. Fix me now. Make it better now. And recovery really isn't like that. I mean, like, if you read the literature, if you read our basic text, it says that there are immediate benefits to working the steps. And that's the truth. When I work a step, I feel better. Some things are better right away. But not everything is better. And I always wanted all the rewards for that any work. Now. I would say that it's been the work of a lot of patient sponsors. I'm on my fifth sponsor. And that's over a period of time. It's over 14 years. You know, some of the sponsors have lasted a long time. My fourth sponsor only lasted a couple of months. I asked him to be my sponsor. He said, yeah. And a couple of months later, he died of liver failure. I got the best sponsor that I thought I could find. He said, yes, I want to sponsor you. I would love to help you. And that's the thing that I found in here. People willing to reach out their hand. And he helped me as long as he could. And I think that I admire that man so much for that. It is an amazing example for me. You know, there's a lot of adventure in my story. I got involved with a woman and I got her pregnant. And basically I was a bum, 6 years clean, delivering pizza for a pizza place. I dropped out of school when I realized that she was pregnant, because I had to figure out how to get the right job so we could have some medical insurance so when the baby was born we could take care of that little person. And I think in reality it's through being extremely irresponsible, I got forced into being responsible. And that's what happened for me. And I would say that my program has changed an awful lot by parenting, and so I got forced. I felt like I had forced myself into this relationship. You know, and now I met that woman in Narcotics Anonymous. She was here. She was clean. I can say that, you know, when we broke up, she had around 5 years clean. You know, it's kind of crazy. I mean, like, everyone makes their choices in life. I found that, you know, it's kind of weird because I was trying to work the steps, and I had a guy who I wasn't working the steps so well with as my sponsor. And I talked to him about my problems, and he'd say, you know, what step are you working with? And a lot of times the answer was, well, I guess I'm really not working the steps. And he would say, well, how can you work these steps that we have in your situation? And I'd talk about how I could do it, and he'd give me direction. You know, and he was very helpful. A lot of the sponsor work that I've had was always about how can you apply the steps, and that's a big deal. How can you actually work the steps? And I took this job where I was working at a drinking water treatment facility that moved from lake to lake in Connecticut. And I was up on this lake in Connecticut praying. I said, dear God, I'm going to have a assistant, too. It's like, dear God. So it's a cool job because I worked like 10 minutes every hour, and the other 50, I was using this guy's fishing pole. And I had my ear out for, like, is a truck coming? Is someone coming to this lodge that the trailer's on? Because I couldn't get caught fishing because it was against the law. So I'm, like, fishing, trying to meditate and talk to God about what am I going to do about this kid that's coming, praying for knowledge of his will for me and the power to carry that out. And, like, after about 2 weeks of doing that, I got a call at this mountain lodge from a man who said that he wanted to give me an interview for this job, that he'd worked with me before and he knew me, and he thought that I could check, you know, this job was like me, and I should come check it out. And so I ended up, you know, shorten the story up, I ended up moving to Easton after I got this job as a chemist. And I moved down there, and then my daughter was born, and then, like, about a year later, the girl that I was with didn't want to be clean anymore, and she wanted to get high, and she wanted to leave. And she did. You know, and basically, like, I've already been there before. I think that the times that I thought I wouldn't be staying clean involved the relationship was over, and I was faced with my own feelings and the self-acceptance. As little as I had or as good as I had, how was I going to stay clean when I wanted to leave, when I wanted to shut everybody out? And I wanted to feel better. I wanted to fix somehow, but knew I couldn't stay. I couldn't, like, use. You know what I mean? Like, that's what we're faced with, I suppose, when the bad stuff happens. You know, people told me that staying clean, some bad things are going to happen. You get to stay clean through them. Got to find a way to stay clean through them. Good things are going to happen. Got to find a way to stay clean through them. You know, the mundane things are going to come. Life is going to come. It's going to be monotonous. You got to figure out a way to stay clean through it. And for me, I think that, you know, in the time that I've been clean, the biggest deal was staying clean through the bad times when I wanted to hurt somebody or myself. And it wasn't until I had 4 or 5 years clean that I found myself, you know, at people's doors at 2 o'clock in the morning telling them I felt like I was going to use. I felt like I was going to hurt myself or somebody else. And because people told me, if you're going to use, call us, 2 o'clock in the morning. Please call before you use. We can help you stay clean through anything. And it wasn't until I had that longer clean time where I showed up at people's doors and said, you know, I call them up 5 minutes before I was there. Put on your pants and the coffee. I'm going to be there. I need you. And they did it. You know, they said, all right, I'm going to put on the coffee. Wake me up when you get here. I'll be back in day. And they did. They sat up with me, you know, and I found that in, like, you know, 7, 8 years clean. The woman left and took the daughter. And big deal, you know. You know, and it's staying clean. You know, basically what happened, I hadn't been doing what I was supposed to be doing. I'd moved to the new town. I focused on the job. I didn't like the NA that I saw. It wasn't the NA I was used to. I didn't do a 90-90 when I moved. Like, someone had told me, you should find a new sponsor and do a 90-90 so everyone gets to know you. You know, they don't care that you have 7 or 8 years clean. You need to meet them. Like, you're the newcomer. You need to get involved. You need to get grounded. You need this, this, and this, a foundation of recovery in your new place. And I didn't do it, you know, and the relationship was falling apart, and I was throwing gifts at it, and that didn't work. Doesn't make anything any better. And, you know, so I was told early on that anything you put before your recovery, you will lose, or you will lose your recovery. And the shit hit the fan. You know, and basically what I had to do was I had to get back involved in service. I had to find a home group and go there every week and meet everyone in the area and go to area service and say, hey, look, you know, I want to be here. I need a sponsor, and ask someone to be your sponsor. And I did all that stuff. And it's kind of funny because I just took a service position. It was the one that I wanted before I left my old area. And I realized that I've been doing area, like, I go to area service. I do it every month. It's something I like to do, you know. I like to see what's going on. It keeps me connected, you know. I think that I found an analogy for it, that having a sponsor and a home group is what, you know, keeps me plugged in. You know, I'm plugged in with what's going on in Narcotics Anonymous. No, is that what keeps me grounded? Having a higher power that I can pray to and have my own understanding, that's what keeps me connected. Where it's like an electrical thing. Anyway, I don't want to get shocked, right? And I don't know exactly what happened to us. Like, we were coming here, and on the way here, we were talking about people who don't come to meetings anymore. And of all the people that I've met in here, the only people that stay clean are the people that are still involved in Narcotics Anonymous. The only people outside of those rules are, like the born-again people, you know? And that's, like, just for me. That's what I know. You know, I know people that they get a, like, religious zeal, and they find a good church, and they can stay clean. But, like, that's not for me. That's not the path I'm going to take. NA is not the only path to stay clean and get clean and be clean and live a life. But in getting involved, you know, and being of service and going to my job every day and not like stealing from them by showing up late or leaving early or not working while I'm there, like, I learned to appreciate what I'm doing and try to, like, be about integrity and principles like we talk about in our steps and traditions. I just kept coming back, you know. I met people in NA that were, like, new, and they decided that I was like the lonely guy with clean time who probably wasn't really an addict, but just hung out because he liked to help people. I met people who really believed that that's who I was, single guy just hanging out. And, you know, I mean, like, I'm okay with that because I was just trying to work, and I was trying to get my daughter on the weekend. Every weekend, I worked out with my now using ex-partner that I would get my daughter every weekend because she was using it. It's real easy to pass your kid off on someone else every weekend if they want to do it. And so I had, like, a good relationship working with my child. And then one day I looked up, and there was a woman that I'd been hanging out with going to NA, and she was working a program, and she had a sponsor. And was about working the steps, and she had a little boy, and she was a really nice person, and was like about everything, but I wasn't like looking for a relationship, because I'd already gotten snagged looking for a relationship. I already got stuck with a relationship I didn't want to be with. It blew up in my face. And, hey, you know, I've known her for 4 or 5 years. We got married last month. Is that right? Yeah. Yeah, we started planning a wedding. It's like we're a blended family. I know that's probably real acceptable around Narcotics Anonymous. You know, she has her son is 5 years old, and she's a super person, and my daughter's 7 and a half. And we started planning a wedding, decided we were going to get married, and we were going to get married in September, and then because we were getting married and planning this, like, church wedding at the church of her choice or our choice, I like it, it's a nice church to get married in, that we'd go over and just get it done to like, let the pressure off, you know? And it's like we were together, and I think that, you know, relationships aren't easy. Relationships don't work, they are work. And like we'd been living together in an apartment, in a three-bedroom place, and one day she jumped up and said, this is like I'm time-warping back now for you. Like I just told you we got married last month. She jumped up one day and said, hey, I'm not in love with you, and I'm leaving. And so she packed up all of her stuff, and like I was in this like really empty place, and like I only had my daughter like, you know, two-thirds of the weekend because I'd gone to court to try and get custody of my daughter because I was looking at how her mother was taking care of her, and what I was seeing was a little girl with broken fingernails and matted up hair who was dirty and hadn't had a bath since before Wednesday when I picked her up on Friday, and it made me cry. Because I have like a brilliant, beautiful little girl, and I want to raise exceptional children, you know. And I said, you know, the judges are going to see these pictures that I'm taking of you, and they're going to award me custody. I didn't tell her what I was doing. The child, I just took pictures of her. I said, it's good to see you. Here's the picture. Say cheese. And I took all these pictures to court with the support of this woman, and I showed them to the judge, and he didn't care. He didn't give a shit. He said, "Well, I love it when my daughter drops the kids off at my house." And I said, "Yeah, well, her mom drops her off at the grandma's house all the time." So I said, "I don't care. She's doing good in school, and I don't care." So anyway, you know, I think I proved that I would be the better parent who wanted the child and would love to have her better. And the mom showed up, and she fought against me because it's not cool when your ex takes the kid from you. You look bad, you know? And so she was about looking good, and so she won, you know? Conservative Delaware, I got beat. You know, I think that, you know, you got to deal with disappointment in recovery. You know, I don't think life is fair. You know, and it's a good thing, because when bad things happen, then you would have to say, well, I guess I've been bad, or I deserve this somehow. And life is just life. And the thing about Narcotics Anonymous is, you know, you may not always look good. If you think you're doing the right thing, or maybe even the next right thing, didn't do the right thing the first time. You know, life happens, and the Narcotics Anonymous program is a tool to help me deal with life. And I had the tools. When she said, I'm leaving, and she packed up all her stuff, I said, you know, I love you, and I can't believe this is happening. And she moved all of her stuff, like some of it to stores and some of it back to her parents. I said, I can't believe you're moving back to your parents. You're crazy. And I can't believe your friends aren't telling you you're crazy. You know, I had a lot of things to say about it. I got to say those things. You know, it wasn't long, and we were, you know, basically back together looking at what we were going to do. And, you know, it's amazing that Narcotics Anonymous offers addicts the opportunity to get and live a life beyond my wildest dreams. I've been at the same company for 8 years, and no one's grabbed me up. At least in the last couple of years, and said, boy, you're really messing up. You know, early on, somewhere along the line, it took me some time to, you know, get down this whole corporate America thing, you know. And, like, that's what my, like, existence is like. But I'm like, I don't even really live for, like, you know, the whole job and wearing a tie to work and all that dumb shit. Like, I really live for See, to me, because like that's just a means to what I want to do with my life. To me, I like being in Narcotics Anonymous. I can't believe, you know, I'm so grateful for what the opportunity we have. I like the fact that I get to be a dad, and I get to cook dinner and put it on the table. And then I get to, like, give some people some baths and put them in bed and tell them that everything's cool and life is going to be good, you know? And that I can, like, parent with somebody. You know, that's, like, beyond... Like I said, I couldn't hold a job and I wasn't going to lose one when I came to N.A., you know? And I couldn't have a relationship and I wasn't going to lose a wife, you know? There weren't going to be kids leaving out of the picture. And, like, I guess I have that kind of stuff now. I own 2 cars, you know? And that's not the promise that Narcotics Anonymous gives. It's freedom from active addiction. And your manifestation of what that freedom might mean is going to be different, you know, than for me or for Joe or Susie. You know, what happens to you is like, you know, it's nice. We got freedom. What we're going to do with our lives, you know, after we start staying clean and get a program for living. And, like, I love my life. I love being able to serve. You know, I'm so grateful you guys asked me to come here and share. You know, I got told early on, we keep what we have only by giving it away. And when I hear people ask me, will you come and share at the meeting for me? I'd love to be there. You know, and if I physically, if it's possible, I'm going to go. You know, I'll be there to carry the message the way I found it, you know. And you know, like, I really realized that Maybe I won't share exactly what each of you or what you might need to hear or what you want to hear, you know, but it takes everybody to carry the message, you know. I think it's important that you carry the message that you have, you know. I think the message, you know, that I have is that I can't believe I'm as old as I am. You know, I cannot believe. And you might look at me in the daylight and say, he doesn't look that old, you know. And the reality is, no one told me that if you get clean now, add 14 years to your age, when you're 14 years clean, that's how old you'll be. I didn't think about that stuff. You know, it doesn't make sense that I could, like, be as old as I am and have 2 kids and be married. And, hey, check it out. We just found out this last week that there's another one coming on the way. Yeah. So that's, like, one of my joys. You know, I think it's important to share, like, you know, that... the joys that I have, you know, that I can stay clean and really live a life, you know, and that, you know, I think that, see the time, in this last week, I can talk about, like, what I'm doing today, you know. I sponsor a couple people. Anyone that has asked me to sponsor them lately, I just tell them, yeah, because I figure it's going to work out somehow. You know, like, I've had more people that I've sponsored than I do right now, and it was working then. And I went through, like, a time period where I only sponsored, like, 4 or 5 people. I sponsor mostly people in the area. I sponsor a guy in Sweden. That probably has a lot to do with the Internet. I met some guy on the Internet, and I ended up going to Sweden, and I sponsored this guy. He's been to the United States. And, you know, when you spend, like, a week with someone, you know, like, at a shot, I don't think I've spent, like, most of the guys I sponsor, I don't spend, like, a whole week's worth of time with them over a year. But this other guy I have, you know, go there and hang out or come here. It's bizarre. I never thought that I would do that. You know what I mean? Like, to me, I was never going to leave my backyard. I didn't have any hope to leave, like, a couple places that I used and, like, you know, a couple places that I copped, and that was it. That was my world. In my car, I had a Volkswagen Bug. It went 77 miles an hour in between these places. You know, like, that was, like, my existence prior to coming to N.A. And, like, I sponsor a couple people, and this week, and I've been telling this one guy, he was out to save the world. He was out to save this addict that didn't want help. And I said, dude, she won't even sit through some meetings, and what happened is you had sex with her, and now you can't think. I said, she's telling other people she doesn't even like you. You know, and you're annoying. She hates your guts. And he was like, I'm going to get her some help, man. And this guy who had, like, 3 years clean in trying to help her ended up using again. And, you know, like, his behavior got really strange. And, like, in like, a week, he lost, like, a job and a half. He had 2 jobs. He lost one and, like, almost all the privileges in another. And, like, he was hanging out with this girl and a guy from my home group who didn't even know that he was using, and they were all using together, like, the crazy thing, this guy's cell phone started calling my wife's cell phone because he's got a callback button. He jams the phone in his pocket all crazy. And so she's listening to the phone. Hello? Who's this? And it's them. And they're talking about how much money they have and what they can get. You know? And, like, that's how fast the insanity happened. He was out to be God. and save someone who didn't have a desire to use. And like for me, like what do I got to do? Like I'm just powerless, right? I mean, like if he doesn't want help, and she doesn't want help, and he ain't getting help unless she gets help, there's nothing for me to do. You know, one of the things I've learned is that I'm powerless over the disease of addiction. And I really can't help anyone that doesn't want help. That's a powerful thing. Because I spent a lot of energy early on trying to help people that didn't want it. You know, a lot of energy. And it just ended up hurting me. You know, and if you just come to meetings, like there's always people looking for help. And if you've got help to give, just go to a meeting and look for someone who's looking for help. Lots of them. You know, lots of people want to share their recovery, want to learn from you what you got and how the hell you did it. You know? And, you know, like for me, it was just easy to say to him, hey, she don't want help. She ain't even sitting through meetings. I think that you're going to be in big trouble if you, you know, if you don't lose her somehow. You know, I feel like I've done what I was supposed to do. Early on, I must have had like 90 days clean. I went to this meeting and I was standing out front smoking a cigarette, trying to bump some cigarettes, trying to bump some money, trying to see who was like, you know, going to do have some fun with me. And this guy walked up and he looked really beat up. And this one guy says, you know, where you been? Nice to see you. Just standing there minding my own business. And the one guy says, you know, man, I've been out using. And I'm glad to be back. I'm coming back now. And the first guy who had asked where he was, he said, I knew you were going to use. And the guy, he dropped his face. He couldn't believe that the guy knew it, and he punched him in the mouth. And he stood over him. The guy was holding his nose, laying on the ground. And the guy who was standing over top of him, the guy who was just coming back and had really colorful tattoos, long sleeve. And he said, you fuck. Why didn't you tell me I was going to use if you knew I was going to use? And I'll tell you, that left such an impression on me. You know, I don't care if you don't like me. If I think you're going to use, I'm going to tell you. You can tell me off. But I already know that if I see someone that I think is going to use and I don't say something, hey, you need to do something about your behavior, or you need to do something, I am going to feel bad. What's happened to me? Where I felt bad because I thought, this guy's not doing, he's doing this, and that's a setup, setting himself up. You know, because I've got the experience. I've seen it happen. And, you know, I'm so glad that I know what I want to do and what I want to be with my life. And I'm so happy I'm doing so many of those things with it. You know, life isn't, it's not a dress rehearsal, you know. I got the program about as good as I think I can at the moment. I'm trying to live it in my life and trying to help other people. And that's like, I don't know if it gets any better for us, you know. I'm really grateful, and I'm so glad that you guys have carried the message to me, and I'm like, you know, I'm living. Hey, look, I don't know how to end what I want to say. You guys have been really good, and thank you very much for letting me share. I love you all.
Thanks a lot, Mike.